Welcome to The Holistic Entrepreneur with holistic nurse practitioner, success coach, and best-selling author, Bonnie Gressel. Bonnie and her expert guests share tips, tools, and strategies to achieve success on your holistic entrepreneur journey. Each show features answers to common entrepreneur challenges, along with a healthy dose of support and motivation. Now, please welcome the host of The Holistic Entrepreneur, Bonnie Gressel.
Well, welcome, everyone. This is your host, Bonnie Gressel, here at The Holistic Entrepreneur. Today, my guest is Neil Janeja, and I'm going to introduce Neil in just a moment. But first, I always want to take a moment to thank all of you for spending your valuable time here with us on the show. I am so honored that you do that. You know, I know that time is our most precious asset, so I always want to make sure that these shows are value-packed so that you feel your time was well spent. You know, I think being a holistic entrepreneur is really more about who you are than what you do. You come from that heart-centered place. You want to make a difference in the world. You love helping others live their dream. And perhaps that's why you've decided to join us on the show today. So if this is your first time listening, welcome. And if you've tuned in before, welcome back. I hope that you find this will be another great show with insights to help you on your entrepreneur journey. Now, make sure that you check out the show page before you leave. There's always a free gift for you there, and I always have links to connect with my guest as well as myself. So make sure that you check that out before you leave. Now, we can connect on Facebook. You can send me a message. I would love to hear from you. Perhaps you have a message to share. I always love having new guests on the show. So reach out to me if that's you. Now, allow me to introduce our guest for today. Neil Janeja is the founder of Gleam Law, a cannabis-focused law firm with offices in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. His practice focuses on business law, intellectual property, and regulatory compliance. In addition, Neil has written several articles on cannabis law and intellectual property. He's spoken at numerous events, including the National Mall in Washington, D.C., Seattle Hemp Fest, continuing legal education seminars, and many cannabis industry events. Neil also appeared in Newsweek, Time Magazine, and on several documentaries for his work in the cannabis legal industry. He's been awarded numerous accolades, including selection as one of the 40 under 40 most influential people in the cannabis industry. He's received 4 Super Lawyers Rising Star Awards and the National Law Journal Cannabis Trailblazer Award. Neil has successfully registered over 400 cannabis-related trademarks. Join me now in welcoming Neil Janeja to the show. Well, welcome, Neil. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to share with us here on The Holistic Entrepreneur. I know that you're a busy person, so thank you so much for taking time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bonnie.
You know, I read a little bit about people in their bio, obviously, but there's always more to the story, right? Would you share with us a little bit more about your journey and what brings you to the work that you do today?
Sure. So I started the law firm about 10 years ago. And at the time, you know, you're a new attorney, you're just getting started, you're learning the ropes, and you basically do what we call door law. And door law is whatever comes through the door.
Oh, I love that.
You know, funny enough, we actually had a case where we dealt with somebody's broken door. So that was also door law. At that point, you know, you're just a general practice attorney, whatever, and pay that rent. But over time, you really get to niche yourself down and develop what that means. So eventually I ended up representing clients that opened up the first retail cannabis shops in Washington and in Seattle. So we were on Newsweek and in Time Magazine and on the BBC, and I was on CNN that morning, and you know, I stepped away from it after that day and said, oh, well, it appears that I'm a cannabis attorney now. So it kind of found me, and it was handy to actually have an understanding of the culture from years previous. But about 5 years ago, that happened. And from there, we kept adding attorneys that were working on the policy side. Until now, we have 4 offices on the West Coast. We have clients in probably about 30 or 40 countries, and we had just hired our 10th person last week.
Wow. Wow. And so you have clients all over the world.
Correct. So when it comes to cannabis law, we have, of course, cannabis companies in Canada, for instance, are now expanding into the US because they're now legal fully. And they have access to public markets. So they're doing stock sales and IPOs and et cetera. And then they're putting that money into the companies down in the US. But beyond that, we do a lot of intellectual property and business work outside of the cannabis industry. And that has clients in India and Saudi Arabia and Japan and China, et cetera.
Mm. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show, and I mean, the law is really the same. The cannabis industry is relatively new, at least. And so that's sort of you're just morphing into another industry. But talking about, I mean, you mentioned intellectual property law, and that's something that I think all entrepreneurs need to deal with. And if they're not, they should probably take a look at it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, patents, of course, if your listeners are in the tech side, if they can get a patent, or even on the mechanical side, if there's any inventions they have. But when it comes to trademarks, this is everything in my view. It's a good branding policy. Trademarks protect marks in trade. So your brand, for instance, mine's Gleam Law, and that's a registered trademark. And the reason is if you want to do a good job, and you want people to remember you, you have your name or your brand that identifies that. And if you don't follow the trademark law, then somebody else may come to you and say, that's my brand. You need to stop using it. Go back and redo all your marketing, your branding, and re-educate people on who you are. So it's a huge thing. And the only reason a brand doesn't matter, in my view, is if you're selling an inferior product at a lower price. You don't really need them to remember you.
Then you don't want to be remembered, right?
No, you certainly don't.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. And just, you know, so that our listeners are kind of all on the same page, talk a little bit about the trademark process. And, you know, it doesn't like happen overnight usually, or at least that's been my experience. And there's the TM and then the R with the circle. And can you just talk about a little bit about the differences between those two and the process and how someone would even start? Say they're no place, but they think, oh, this is probably a good idea. I need to do this.
Oh, sure. I think you can start on a zero or an almost non-budget all the way up to let's actually make this a major line item when we bring in money or we're spending money. But from like the no budget side, let's start there, because the more you're empowered to do your own work, the more you can put your money towards other aspects. The TM says it's a trademark, and that just means you're holding it out as a trademark, which means you can put a TM on everything. There's no actual legal significance except putting people on notice that you believe what you TM'd is a trademark and it's yours. Doesn't have to have any legal foundation beyond that. Now, if you register it with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, also known as the PTO or the USPTO, then you can use the circle R after the registration is done. That means a registered trademark. And that can take anywhere from 8 to 12 months on a good day, and often longer. So where's that in between there? Well, you want to make sure you're not infringing on somebody else's mark when you create a brand. And if it's your name, you basically have a freedom to use your own name in most scenarios. But if it's an actual brand or something that's not identified just by your name, then you want to make sure you're not infringing somebody else's brand before you start using it. And that can be a combination of Google and searching the TESS, which is the trademark online system, for seeing what is already there. And it's not just an identical mark. It's anything likely to cause consumer confusion, which means Gleam Law would be infringing even though it's spelled different. You know, and Bleam Law, I don't know why you name a company that, but let's say, would also be considered confusing and wouldn't be permitted. So the breadth of protection expands beyond just the actual name. An example I like to use is, you're walking down a grocery store aisle, you see a can of liquid in red with white cursive. You probably think it's Coca-Cola. It doesn't even matter what it says. Whatever it says, if it's not Coca-Cola, it's probably infringing because you're confused. Mm-hmm. And that's where it comes into play. So that's the basics, is what I would say when you're looking to make sure you can use it. And if you can use it, you have some common law rights just by using it in commerce, which means you're usually grandfathered in, sometimes forever, if somebody else registers the same or similar name. But your grandfathering only goes into the regions in which you're doing commerce, in which you're doing business. So if you're just in, let's say, the state of Ohio, they could register the trademark and get the other 49 states. and you wouldn't be able to expand. So that's why registration matters. And I'd recommend in most scenarios, if you're very studious, you could do some research on it or go to a good trademark attorney. I don't recommend most of the cheaper or inexpensive places that are just mills that do it online just because they don't do the proper searches. So you may end up filing for registration and you don't know you can't get the mark for a year. And that's a year of marketing and advertising that you've been doing. So that's generally the process as far as trademarks go.
Well, and I can vouch for you. You need to have a good search because if a company says they're going to do a search for you, it needs to be expansive. Otherwise, you're right. And it doesn't work. And that likelihood of confusion, I think, is really difficult to deal with. I mean, to get that overturned or get that changed or still get your trademark through. What is your take on that, Neil?
I think that's true. I mean, it's a major fact-based analysis. So determining what may or may not be infringing when you register or when you apply for registration is a difficult thing to determine, and it's a moving target. And then if you get a rejection from the trademark office, knowing how to overcome that is also difficult. So those are two of the things that a trademark attorney is worth getting or paying for. On the other hand, you know, if you're not going to put any money into marketing or advertising and you can just kind of throw the dice and see what happens in a year, then maybe you don't need to pay for one. It could go either way. It just depends on what your resources are when you're growing. I mean, I started my business in my bedroom. So I understand getting a business off the ground for a few $100 when you get started, and then you really have to pick and choose where you're going to spend that money.
Is there a point in time in someone's entrepreneur journey where, say, they don't start out with a trademark or going for that? Is there a point in time along that journey that you really need to do this? I mean, is there sort of a drop dead date?
My view is the moment you're going to spend your first dollar on marketing that brand is also the time you should go do this, because otherwise all that money can be wasted at some point. Because you'd have to change your name. Now, in some businesses, it's not really required. There's personal relationship businesses where it's who you are and you're not replaceable, and they're coming to you because of that relationship versus that brand or that marketing. And in that scenario, it's a different thing. If you have to change your brand, is it even going to matter? All of your clients know you. Your new clients hire because they know you. So I don't think it would matter as much.
Okay. That's good. That's really good advice. Now, you know, you got into the cannabis industry or, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. It sounds like sort of by accident, just like, oh, I guess I'm a cannabis attorney. So how did, you know, what changed for you in your entrepreneur journey as an attorney to go from, you know, when you started in your bedroom or wherever it was you started to where you are today and with, you know, several people in your firm?
You know, when you're getting started, you realize, I mean, when I got started, I realized I did not equate to my peers in terms of experience. I was a new attorney. So I had to differentiate myself as much as possible. I couldn't be an attorney for every area of practice. So one of my backgrounds, I used to do quite a bit of lighting. I used to own a lighting company that did nightclubs and concert tours and festivals and production lighting, stage shows, this kind of thing. So I decided to be a lighting lawyer. Now the beauty is, how do you become the best in your field? You just invent it. There's no such thing as lighting law.
I was going to say, what? I've never heard of that, a lighting lawyer.
I am the only one, funny enough. So I just eliminated all of the competition. And I would get calls from all over the country from lighting companies that needed touring contracts or what have you. So I was able to develop an area there. In the end, you have to differentiate yourself as much as possible or in some way reduce competition until you are the best at what you do. And once you're the best at what you do, it doesn't matter. The field's wide open, right? And you can also choose your price. And that's a great place to be. But after that, you know, cannabis law came by and I was an intellectual property attorney by trade. So I did quite a bit of intellectual property. And at first I went and I listened to legal speakers that said they were intellectual property attorneys in cannabis. And I realized I knew more than they did. So that was the area, right? So we got to file, you know, some of the first cannabis patents and work on quite a few of the trademarks. Just because there wasn't a whole lot of competition, so you can easily differentiate yourself.
You know, you bring up such a good point, Neil, because this happens all across, really, I think, any type of business that people might be in, is that importance of differentiating yourself, making what makes you unique.
Absolutely. There's nothing more important than trying to separate yourself from being just another face in a sea of faces in your, yeah, in your business.
So do you have suggestions based on, you know, your experience and the people that you've worked with, you know, in the cannabis industry? Because now cannabis is becoming such a big thing. I mean, it's legal in Canada and some places in the US, and it's just going to continue to grow. I think it's going to be more and more important for those folks to find that differentiating factor for themselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the cannabis industry, if they wanted to get into it, I mean, I'd recommend using whatever their core competencies are. And I guess I get this question a lot. I mean, this is our fastest growing industry of this generation.
Yeah.
There's no harm in getting involved in it. But how you get involved in it is using your current skill set. You don't go and say, hey, you know, I don't know how to grow any plants, but I'm going to be a cultivator. No, if you come from an HR background, you go and become an HR company within cannabis. It's a different industry, not a different job set.
Yeah. Oh, that's, and really with any new industry, I mean, years and years ago, it was holistic practitioners or naturopaths, or I mean, now they've been around for many, many years, but there was a time when that was a new field too, a new business to go into. And so it really crosses all of those lines that many entrepreneurs, you know, face, in that it's only a matter of time before the, you know, whatever you're doing becomes sort of almost to the point of saturation.
Oh, absolutely. So you either get first mover advantage, or again, you differentiate yourself one way or another. Or I guess, you know, you can always find a new career, which is always a good idea every 10 or 15 years anyways.
Yeah. I always tease people that all my life, I think I've changed, not total careers, but at least jobs, at least every 5 years. It's like, I just get bored after 5 years.
I think everyone should do that. I mean, life is supposed to be more exciting and challenging. I think, 11 years is what I usually set my schedule on, is every 11 years, you should be at the top of your field. Like, hey, go start something else. Live a different life every decade.
Oh, I love that. I love that that perspective. So now, for those of our listeners who might be just in the beginning stages of their entrepreneurial journey, maybe they're saying, you know, I know that I meant to do something, but I don't know exactly what it is that I want to do. How do you begin with people, if you talk to people who do this, and I know I talk to these people all the time, you know, there's that saying that, you know, do what you love or follow your passion and the money will follow, which isn't always true. But how does one become an expert? Say they've chosen something. How do they become an expert? What, you know, because it doesn't happen overnight, but it certainly is doable for everyone, I believe.
Well, I mean, there is the usual process, and there's books written on the 10,000 hours in order to become an expert. Sure, that's one way. I absolutely believe that the easiest way to become an expert is just to invent the subject matter, and you're the de facto expert because you just invented the subject and you get to define what that means. And I mean, in our view, the cannabis lawyers got to do this a bit. You know, the first, you know, 25 that started in Washington and Colorado got to define what that means and how the laws are going to be written. But I think that works in any area. Just create a whole new subject area. Like Cirque du Soleil invented an area. For the listeners, Cirque du Soleil is kind of an acrobatic theater circus combo. And they're big in Vegas, but they do tours. But they invented an entire area of entertainment that didn't exist. So they were the de facto leaders in it. And now there still hasn't been anything to beat them, in my view. So that's the way to do it. Rename yourself, create a new subject matter, and then decide what that is.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea. And you know, on a smaller scale, obviously, but years ago when I worked at a large multi-specialty clinic as a nurse practitioner, I worked in internal medicine in the beginning, and they had never had a nurse practitioner in that department before. So they didn't know what to do with me. So what I was able to do was just invent what I did and what a nurse practitioner did in this particular area of the clinic. And it was awesome because you are so right. If you make it up yourself, you know, you get to be and talk about differentiation. I mean, I was the only one, right? Just like you were the only cannabis attorney in the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way to go. Plus, who's going to decide whether you did great or not? There's nobody to compare you with. Exactly. You're obviously the best at what you do.
Exactly. So we talked a little bit about marketing and the necessary, you know, the need for at least thinking about trademarking if you're going to start marketing. What about other ways of promoting yourself? Not necessarily what you do, but just you as a person. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing that really hit me was everybody tells you when you're going to college or when you're getting started, look, you got to go network. When you try to go network as an inexperienced person or just anybody asking more experienced people, and it feels almost dirty. And I think we need to get this whole networking concept. We need to kill it completely. The idea is to go make personal connections. Go find people you like to talk to, you like to hang out with. Those are the ones you want to do business with anyways. I don't care how good you are. If you're just boring, I don't know if I want to do business with you. Going out and looking at it from a different perspective of I want to get to know people instead of I want to use them for what they're doing or get them to get my business, I think is fundamental. And then one of the other ways I really go out and do what I do or market myself is I try to reflect my personality as much as possible. And you know, I like drinking whiskey here and there. So whenever a client or somebody refers a client to me, we send them a bottle of whiskey, usually a nice bottle. And I think we spent well over $10,000 on whiskey in 2018 so far.
Oh, my.
I don't
drink whiskey, but I'm sure because I don't know what's good and what's not good. But I'm sure the top of the end stuff is not cheap, right?
It's about $100.
Yeah. You know, something that you talk about in terms of promoting yourself and you show your personality and you come out, this is who I am and I like to drink whiskey and so here's some. But, you know, it's all about, I think, that authenticity. People can tell when you are not being authentic. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, actually it was a client the other day, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't know any other way to be. This is just what you see is what you get. This is all there is. You know, but I think that there's not enough of that these days because people are busy, you know, networking, as you were talking.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think if everybody seems like a cookie cutter person or not authentic or not passionate or, you know, isn't sharing their emotions, they're really not real people. You know, we deal with people, not computers and robots when we're deciding how we're going to move our business forward.
Yeah. And it's all about relationships. I mean, and I know that all the marketing gurus talk about this as well, but it's so true. It really is all about relationships. It doesn't matter if you're a coach or you're selling, you know, perfume or you're an attorney or whatever you do for your business. If you don't have that relationship, you know, if you don't build on that with the person that you're serving or, you know, your customer, your client, or even your partners. I think that just has to be there.
Absolutely. I think that's everything.
So in your firm, you have, how many attorneys did you say?
Six or seven. We have 10 people right now. Actually, I guess that means we have 8 or 9 attorneys. We've got to hire some more support staff.
Okay.
Quite a few. We have 4 offices.
So, and how does that work when you're in different locations with 4 offices? I'm assuming they're not all in the same building. And then you've got, you know, multiple people. How do you keep that cohesiveness as a team? Or is that not really part of the structure of the firm?
That is actually something we're struggling with right now. So I've designed the firm to to be mostly paperless and telecommuting if necessary. People could work from anywhere on the planet. On the other hand, I make people come into the Seattle office. Otherwise, I get lonely here by myself. So we require 60% attendance only in this office. In the other three offices on the West Coast, we don't. But what was created, even though you know we have video conferencing and a number of different ways to communicate, is there wasn't a great level of teamwork being developed between the offices. And most of the attorneys, I am up and down the West Coast, so I get to work with everyone every few weeks. But most of the other attorneys do not even meet attorneys in other cities and states. So we haven't figured out how to solve that well, especially since the more we get to know each other, the better we work together, the better the business does.
Right.
So I'm open to ideas. Maybe we'll just have to do a retreat sometime for a week.
Yeah. You know, retreats are a great idea. I worked for a hospital at one point in the management team, and every year we had to do the retreat because even though the hospital is like one building, everyone's in the same building, there were people that you didn't see like all year, or maybe you'd pass them in the hallway or the cafeteria or something. But those retreats really brought us together as a team, because even though we were all doing our own things in different departments, there still needed to be that feeling of family.
Absolutely. I think it changes everything. I mean, we're a team more so than a family, I think, is the view to look at it. But regardless, you know, it's always a benefit if we can feel closer or be friends.
So how would you suggest or based on, because you've got, it's kind of interesting setup that you have people in different places in the country. How would you suggest if people are starting a business and they have, people in other parts of the country or whatever, to stay connected? I know you said that's something that you're struggling with a little bit now as a firm, but what has worked for you guys and what has not been so helpful?
A lot of phone calls. One method that I know one of our earliest out-of-state attorneys did is we had basically a chat area that people were just on in the morning, so we can get in early and talk on it. Now, we didn't really adapt that very well, but he very much liked it. So that was an idea. I think teleconferencing or video conferencing might work. Or maybe everybody just needs to go to Maui. I really like Maui.
Ooh, I like that. I'm sure that all the people who work in your firm would love that idea.
I'm sure they would.
So in terms of bringing on other partners or people in the firm, other attorneys, are you all doing cannabis law in some way, shape, or form, or are there other things?
Well, it's about maybe 85% of the total firm. So we've got quite a few of other clients from, chains of waxing salons to public companies to YouTube stars. I think we have a porn site actually, as well as alcohol.
Okay.
But we generally target cannabis. So we have our business transaction, we have our intellectual property and patent attorneys, we have a banking attorney, a tax law attorney, a litigator, a CBD attorney, and that's cannabidiol. Or generally what we have is our grouping. We have an entertainment practice in California because I guess everyone does in California. It's just the state for it. But right now, the fastest growing industry of our lifetimes, we are specific to cannabis.
Yeah. Well, and it's good that you guys do what you do because there probably aren't a lot of, are there a lot of law firms that do this?
No, which makes finding attorneys to hire extremely difficult. So there's just not many. I think we counted 23 in the state of Washington, about 25 in San Francisco, about 40 some in LA. It's a pretty limited practice area right now.
Wow. You know, we've talked about some interesting things today on our show. And I know that people's minds are full of stuff and life is busy. If there was one thing that you really wanted to pass on to our listeners today, one message, one little golden nugget, if you will, what do you think that would be, Neil?
I think it's as important, and we mentioned before, differentiate yourself. Mm. Come up with something new here. Don't be another real estate agent. Be the real estate agent that is specific to the reparent, one kid and a toddler families, or maybe that's a little too niche, but really develop the area you want to work in, be different than everyone else, let your personality shine through, and be the expert in that area. You know, maybe the de facto expert. And self-promotion is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, and if you're comfortable with who you are, if you really, you know, I talk about this a lot in the show, how much we love ourselves unconditionally, right? Because a lot of people love themselves conditionally. I love myself when I lose weight, I have a good hair day, whatever. But to love yourself unconditionally, you should be fine with, I mean, you should accept yourself the way you are. So if you've got, you know, some warts or whatever, still promoting yourself should feel good.
Absolutely. As an entrepreneur, that's all you're selling is you.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, hey, you're not always selling yourself. Look, you're always selling something. Even if your kids won't eat the broccoli, you've got to sell them that broccoli. So that's part of the job. So always go out and sell yourself, as cliche as it sounds. You know, be somebody that people do want to work with or at least hang out with.
Yeah.
And the business will come.
Absolutely. So, Neil, I know that people are going to want more of you. They're going to want to know about the firm a little bit more and about what you can do. I mean, maybe some of our listeners today have a cannabis business and they don't really know what to do next. Tell us more how they can get more information about you and the firm and the work that you do.
Sure. The website is gleamlaw.com. That's the gleam in your eye, law.com. And my email address is neil@gleamlaw.com.
Perfect. And so if anybody wants to reach out to Neil, I will put the website link on the show page and it will be hyperlinked. So you can just click on it and magically go there. And I thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you so much for taking time. I know that you're a busy person. And so I so appreciate you taking the time to be on the Holistic Entrepreneur today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Holistic Entrepreneur, hosted by Bonnie Gressel. The Holistic Entrepreneur has been brought to you by M&B Global Solutions, your source for individualized coaching for entrepreneurs and authors, along with book editing and publishing services. To learn more, go to mandbglobalsolutions.com.